Welcome to a very special episode of the Chattering Classes, our first, and possibly only, Oscars special. And joining me for the Oscars special is my wife, Justine Oldmeadow. How are you, Justine?
Very good, thank you, Matthew.
Oh, that's lovely. Lovely to see you again.
Lovely to be back here.
Now, are you a big fan of the Oscars?
The Oscars. I like Oscar time and the buzz of movies to watch and great performances to, you know, must see. And, I do like Oscar time.
And do you enjoy getting the Who magazine's Who's best dressed, worst dressed on the red carpet?
Oh, no, it kind of spit nauseating. I did notice something this year where there was a bit of talk about Rosamund Pike and how brave she was for wearing a low-cut and backless dress 6 weeks after giving birth to her baby. So brave, so brave.
Where was that? Well, that wasn't at the Oscars, so they haven't been yet. Where was that at?
The Golden Globes,
oh,
sorry.
Oh, that was at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Oh, and she was very brave for wearing a dress.
Yes, very brave. So that kind of carry-on, I just think.
She's a hero.
Oh, I just feel a bit sorry for them having to be under such scrutiny and, you know, over what they wear.
Yeah. And do you like to watch the Oscars, or would you prefer just to have a highlights package of who wins?
Oh,
who
just the highlights, really. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, the Golden Globes were fun with them. I do like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. They were entertaining. But, yeah, I don't really have to watch the whole show. Just the highlight reel, please.
Yeah. I never really understand the in memoriam. That always makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know. And how much
applause.
Yeah. It is a bit uncomfortable.
This person no one's heard of.
No one's heard of.
This person everyone's heard of. And this person.
Yeah.
It's very strange. I never get that at all. Do you have any favourite Oscar moments from the past off the top of your head?
I have one that's sort of Gwyneth Paltrow winning for Shakespeare in Love was just a tragedy, and her speech was annoying. Too much, too many tears.
Too many.
And who else was memorable? Matthew McConaughey, was it? He won last year. And had a very strange speech.
His speech was very strange.
Very strange.
Who's his hero?
Yeah, himself.
In 10 years.
Yeah,
who's your hero? Me in 10 years.
Yeah, the odd one.
It's good positive thinking, but it's very strange to talk about in front of everyone. For the Dallas Buyers Club, wasn't it?
Yes, it was odd. He's an interesting character.
Yeah, this time of year, though, we do tend to binge on movies, don't we?
Yes, now Matthew and I have been on an Oscar-related movie binging feast.
So we're going to talk about, I don't know, six or so Oscar-nominated movies. Some of them are nominated for Best Picture, or they've been nominated for a performance in them. Most of them are Best Picture nominated.
But we agree there's hype, there's buzz, there's talk about these movies and these performances. So we sort them out.
Yeah, or we go, oh, someone, this one keeps getting mentioned, or...
Yeah, we've...
And a lot of often we'll go, oh, I don't want to see that. Even if it is nominated,
yeah,
it doesn't seem like my cup of tea.
Yeah, but we sort of knew that we'd be talking about them, so we saw as many as we could.
Yeah.
And which was good because there was a few that I wouldn't have watched, you know, unless we were going to be talking about them, so it was interesting.
Yeah. So my Oscar moment, I remember I had a party once at my house when I was at uni, an Oscars party where everyone drank probably Passion Pop or something gross like that. Mm-hmm. And we watched the Oscars, and I promised someone that if Titanic won Best Picture, I would go and watch it in the cinema. And, of course, Titanic did win Best Picture. I was very disappointed. I didn't go and see it in the cinema, actually.
Aww.
Which was a wise move. That movie's overlong and dull.
Yeah, very.
Anyway, so what we might start off with is a movie that we only watched last night, so it's fresh in our mind. And it's nominated for a Oscar for Best Picture, and it's also nominated for Best Supporting Actor for J.K. Simmons, and that movie is Whiplash.
So glad we watched that. So this movie Matthew had been telling me that we need to get around to watching it. It's been nominated. We should see it. What's it about? A drummer. Oh, we'll watch that tomorrow.
Yeah, it's about a drumming thing a teacher who's a bit mean to him. And
I didn't think it wouldn't be one that I'd go and see, just the sound of it. But wow,
yeah.
What a movie.
One of those movies that it's not really buzz and it's not hype. It's just listening to other podcasts and other reading reviews, it just,
when you hear people talk about it,
yeah,
you want to see it. It sounds intriguing. So Matthew, all he said was about a drummer. I was like,
I didn't want to tell you too much about it.
Then I watched an interview with a few different actresses, and Reese Witherspoon, who I love, was mentioning Whiplash and gave a different perspective of what it was about. And I thought, oh, that does sound interesting. So,
what did she say it was about?
So she mentioned that it was about the difficulties of being an artist, and didn't really even mention about drumming. Just how, you know, what is said to you can make a huge impact on your life, your creativity, can put you down or can build you up. Just about how hard it is and sacrifices that need to be made, and the fragility of it, I guess, as well. Yeah. And it just sounded very interesting, more than just a drumming movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to undersell movies as much as possible
and
just say, well, let's just watch this movie about drumming and then
see
what it's like. But yeah, it's about.
So, yeah. So we watched it, and wow, it was just so intense. And
yeah, for a movie about drumming and a boy who wants to be a drummer and goes to school to be a drummer, is super tense.
Mm.
It's harrowing at times.
Harrowing, yeah. So right up my alley.
It's even more so than a thriller, for sure, in some parts.
Mm.
And especially, we won't give away much of what happens in the plot, but the last, say, 10 minutes of the film is so gripping and
brilliant.
Very,
really,
very good.
Brilliant.
And
about brilliance, and it is a moment of brilliance too. And I think what I got from the movie was a sort of trying to bring out artistic brilliance in either yourself or in someone else. And and I think this movie, he's only 30 years old, the director
The
writer,
yeah.
30 years old. Boy Wonder. And he's managed to create with this something amazing. And,
are you a boy wonder at 30?
I think for to create a movie like this, writing and directing yourself is, at such a young age, I think he's pretty, 29, whatever it is. I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The performances are amazing. The lead actor, he is a musician. Drummer. Yeah. He did study drumming, but apparently he took extra lessons leading up to the.
You'd want to hope so.
Because most of the movie is him drumming.
Yeah.
And really getting into it. Really drumming. I don't know anything about drumming, but he looked like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
And
it'd be interesting actually if someone you knew was an excellent drummer and watched it and went, oh, come on now, it's just stupid the way certain people.
It'd be interesting to watch with a musician actually.
Yeah, and I think the movie's about what you're prepared to sacrifice for greatness in art, not even just to be an artist, but to, if you want to be the best. And I don't know if it's about art. I think it's any endeavor.
Mm.
If you want to be the best at anything, in any job, in any field, what are you prepared to sacrifice, or what do you have to sacrifice to get to that?
Yeah.
To the top.
How brutal it can be. I mean, this really illustrates how physically and mentally exhausting it can be to get, and that's true. It can be in sport. I think it reminded me a lot of what elite athletes would go through, that ballet.
Yeah, it's
performances.
To,
anything that pushes your body and your mind to this limit that we normally wouldn't go to. They have to go there. They have to push through it. There has to be someone there that pushes them to it.
Yeah.
And the means in which to get there.
One of the sports in particular, and it's currently happening now in the Australian Open, tennis, is tennis is seen as like having those really pushy parents and
yeah.
and having the
I mean, you think it could be style. About ten. It could have been about tennis, yeah. and there's always a coach behind.
Yeah,
you know,
someone has to be pushing them
yeah.
to their limit.
To their limit. Excellent scene, and the scene in which he explains himself, I guess, in this. I had this horrible opinion of him, and then when he explains his sort of reasons behind it, it does eliminate
the teacher
explains, you know, his reasons behind his horrible sadistic behavior, which yeah. is I don't know, perhaps it needs to be there because these people are doing what it's not normal, you know, the level that they have to get to reach brilliance in their chosen area is extreme. So interesting subject matter, excellent acting, directing. It was just such a surprise.
Yeah. This movie. Yeah. And do you think there's any way that J.K. Simmons will not win an Oscar for that movie?
I can't see him not. And he's some. I've seen.
It's not really smart money. He won the Golden Globe, and I'd be very surprised if he doesn't, because it's just he's not even. He's nominated for supporting actor, but he's in the movie almost as much. It's one of the.
His performance is so overbearing too. That's his character. He's there to scare and to intimidate, and he does it on the screen. You know, he's what you remember about it, even though he's not the main actor.
I wonder if it's like in Silence of the Lambs, how Anthony Hopkins is only on screen for some ridiculous amount of time, like 15 minutes in the whole movie. But until someone points that out to you, it seems like he's in every scene.
Exactly,
so he's throughout. Yeah. So I wonder if it's the same in this. I haven't really looked that up or thought about it. But it seems like, and certainly he hangs over the drummer at every time over Andrew, isn't it?
Literally. Oh, I just urge everyone to go out and see it. I can't imagine anyone not enjoying it.
Yeah, and especially if you've got any kind of interest in what it takes to...
Mm. If you've ever sort of, and I haven't, and I still enjoyed it, but I think if you've ever pursued something to the point where you want to be the best, want to be the best in the world, whatever it is, you could really appreciate this. And even if you haven't, I really enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
It gives an insight into that world. I've often thought, you know, yeah, these people who reach the top, what do they go through?
Yeah.
Not always pleasant.
Yeah, it's the thing I have up in my classroom, which I always show students, which is like the most boring life lesson you'll ever learn, is that 100% of successful people work incredibly hard at what they do. And that and students, that's like, oh, there's no one who is extremely successful that doesn't do stuff. I just find it about sacrifice because the drummer actually cuts people out of his life.
Yeah,
to their faces and tells them why, because he's going to be the greatest. So he's well aware
of
that.
And that's a very single-minded ambition, that drive, and not caring about anything else.
Yeah.
But I think it's such an interesting choice making it about drumming, because I know in my head drumming, and I think a lot of it seems very cool, very relaxed. You know, they're just out there beating some sticks. You know what I mean? It's a lot of other instruments I can see, you know, there's, you know, they look so tense and they're into it, but drumming just always seems so cool, so relaxed. So that is such an interesting, you could have done the same sort of storyline with ballet or tennis or swimming even, something.
Well, it's funny you say ballet, because I was thinking about this today, and it's very similar to Black Swan, wouldn't you say?
Yes, there are similarities there, I think. And even with the other Oscar one, we might segue into it, actually, is Foxcatcher.
Oh, right, yes.
But let me just mention the director's name of Whiplash, Damien Chazelle.
Uh-huh.
So that,
has he done anything else?
I think one or two things, not much. There's not much on his list. So, to just break into the scene with this kind of movie pretty much is, this one's so well.
Yeah, was this the movie that I was talking about was on the blacklist? You know what the blacklist is in Hollywood? I think it's, I could be completely wrong, but I believe it's called a blacklist, a black script list or something like that, where there are this list of scripts, fantastic scripts,
yeah,
like the best unmade scripts in Hollywood, where they can't get made, even though it gets passed around and goes, well, this is a great script, but I don't know how we're going to film it. And this was one of those, because like you said, they go, oh, okay, wow, what a great script. Boy drums for 2 minutes and is very sweaty. Okay, how do we make that arresting?
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, boy drums again and is sweaty.
Mm.
And drumming the exact same thing, or hitting the drum over and over
then
and over.
Then more drums.
And more drums.
yeah, how could this be engaging? Yeah.
Yeah.
Difficult, but yeah, they did really good job. Excellent. I give them 5 stars.
A really good job.
A really good job with this. Yeah, very entertaining.
All right, well, we might move on then to the next movie I want to talk to you about. We might talk to two in conjunction because the lead actresses in these movies are up for Best Actress. These movies aren't nominated for Best Picture, but these performances, central performances, and maybe even supporting actresses are mentioning this. And I want to start with maybe your favourite film of so far of the season, and maybe for the last year, is Still Alice.
Yeah, so there's lots of the Still Alice.
Yeah. We're going to give a Wild. Brief rundown of... Yeah, we're going to talk about Wild as well.
Yeah, okay.
But first, we'll go
with Still Alice. So, well, both Still Alice and Wild are adapted by books. I had read Still Alice. I hadn't read Wild, but I'm now reading it. Still Alice I've read quite a few years ago and just bawled through the whole thing. So I knew it was a harrowing story, but when I heard it was being made into a movie and Julianne Moore, one of my favourite actresses of all times, was playing Alice, I knew I had to see it.
Yes.
And, yeah, it was... Oh,
we might be slightly biased, you, because both of us...
I mean, who doesn't like Julianne?
I'm in love with Julianne Moore in every performance she's ever done.
Brilliant in everything she does.
Yeah.
But this, so this is, yeah, this was directed by a couple, and one of them, one of the co-directors, he's at the moment in the advanced stages of ALS.
That's right, yeah.
He's lost his ability to talk, so he did a lot of his direct, or all of his directing, using a computer generated voice through an iPad, and his partner did the rest, and they wrote the screenplay too. So they it's Richard Glatzen, and his partner is Wash Westmoreland. So Richard's the one who has ALS. So it's about early onset Alzheimer's. So I think with the directors, what he was going through, what they were both going through with ALS and with this, it's got such a... It's just written beautifully. And a lot of the dialogue was written by the director. It's just so touching and real. And in such a short amount of time, just from the first scene, you're just into this woman's life without any backstory. You're just, within two scenes, you know who she is. You love her. You know what kind of woman she is. And then straight away it's into that start of the disease. So
she gets early onset dementia, possibly, well, genetic, isn't it? That's what they say.
Yeah, they find out it's genetic. The early onset is a genetic.
She has condition. Three children. Mm. Yeah, three children, two daughters and a son. And so she has to ask them, or they can get tested to see if they have the condition, and that's pretty harrowing when she finds that out, that she may have passed it on to her children. But the cast, or supporting cast, is her husband's played by Alec Baldwin.
They specifically wanted to work, well, Julianne Moore wanted to work with Alec again. They had worked together with 30 Rock and had a good time, and this is such a different role, and he didn't know whether he could do it, and he just does it so beautifully.
It's a really, a real portrayal of a marriage, wouldn't you say? They're both very high achievers in the film.
Mm.
He's a doctor, I believe, or a scientist. Yeah.
She's a university professor. They're both highly educated, so her work revolves around linguistics, and then you sort of plopped in at the movie where she's just starting to forget words and starting to lose all those aspects of herself that, you know, is her, and how it affects the family and what happens with the relationship. I just think it's such a beautiful movie, and it's something that so many people are going through, have gone through with family members. It's not something pleasant to watch, but it is shown in this movie with such compassion and just told so beautifully by Julianne Moore. And there's a particular scene where she gets invited to do a speech, a talk for other people that are going through, and other carers that are going through Alzheimer's. And, oh, God, that scene. And she just, yeah, she makes this speech. And apparently it took them ages. Julianne Moore would read the speech and be like, it's not right, it's not right. So they'd rewrite it. And then the end one they end up with is just, it's, yeah, very hard to keep dry eyes.
And that's probably the clip they'll show before she, you know, before her name's read out at the Academy Awards for Best Actress. You know how they show a clip from the movie? It'll probably be that one there as well. Now, who's her? So she's got two daughters in the movie. One of them is Kirsten Stewart. From Twilight fame, amongst other things. And she's fantastic in this as well, isn't she?
She is. She's the daughter. And it also explores the mother-daughter dynamic and relationship, and how, and from the carer's perspective as well, what they go through. And, yeah, it's just done so gently and beautifully. She will be very deserving of the Oscar.
Is that a when she wins it?
It's about time.
It probably is about time.
But very, very, very lovely movie. And in researching it, the directors, as I didn't think I'd seen anything with these, that these guys had been directed before, found out that one of them had a history, well, his past was in the porn industry, where he's very well respected. He's won quite a few awards for his adult movies.
His adult movies?
Yeah.
Do you have any titles for us?
So Mr. Fluffy. The Fluffer. Not Mr. Fluffy. That would be a good one.
The Fluffer.
About what you can imagine.
Did I have this conversation with you, or was it someone else? Only a few days ago, about whether there was a porn movie.
Yeah, we did have this about
being a fluffer.
Yeah.
And he directed that movie. That's pretty
weird. He directed that movie and a host of others. He wanted to revolutionize
the porn industry.
The porn industry with his take. It was just so. You see, after seeing this movie, you wouldn't believe it.
You added like artistic. An artistic bent, so to speak,
but there were still porn movies.
Yeah. Is he an award-winning porn movie director?
Yes, he'd won the porn, the adult movie entertainment award.
He won the porn award?
He did, best directing. So that was a funny bit of trivia I saw.
Wow. I remember, going back to Julianne Moore's performance, I was explaining to someone, it's hard to explain, but that you, when you watch the movie, I felt like it was happening to Julianne Moore.
Mm.
Like I was watching Julianne Moore go through early onset Alzheimer's, which was hard to explain because it makes it sound like it's a negative, like, oh, she's just being her.
She's not acting, but she just inhabits it.
Yeah.
So well. Apparently she just went and observed a lot of people are going through Alzheimer's, and everything she does on the screen, every sound she makes, all the movements are all things that she saw. So it's very true to life. And I think people who've had a loved one go through it will just appreciate the way it's been done.
Yeah.
With such compassion.
And she's a funny lady, isn't she, Julianne Moore?
She is funny. She's lovely.
Sounds like she just is a... She's always very intense and very... Lots of crying in her movies.
Her roles are so intense and dark and... but in real life, she just seems like the most, like one of, you know, the very light-hearted. She loves to chat. She loves to laugh. She's not very, doesn't seem very serious.
Yeah.
And she chooses these roles.
I heard, yeah, heard her talking to Alec Baldwin on his podcast, which I think is Here's the Thing. And it's there were some very funny discussions where they were talking about how they would get in trouble from the directors because they were too busy chatting,
yeah,
wanting the director to go away because they were too busy having just been giggly.
She likes to chat, chat, chat. She likes to make best friends with whoever she's starring with. She's just
ask them about where they got their jacket.
Yeah, and
talking, talk, 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 and then action and crying and intense.
And then she just switches into this.
Yeah,
she's great.
So that's still Alice.
It's, that's still Alice. If you're in the mood for
a week. And you watched that two nights in a row.
In a row. I watched it by myself and then I had to watch it again with Matthew. But, yeah, really, really touching. The scene again where she says that speech too, I think what I loved about it was that it was about them, that they are themselves. They're losing bits of themselves all the time, but they are who they are.
Yeah.
And... you know, not to lose sight of it. And I think anyone sort of going through a condition where they lose so many things about themselves and they, you know, just they are who they are and they're just going through
a disease
yeah, and trying to get through it.
Yeah.
Because there is so much misunderstanding and prejudice, I think, and fear about dementia and Alzheimer's. So I think it's great that it's out there. I hope lots of people go and see it.
Okay. And the other movie we're talking about, where the for best actress, which is Reese Witherspoon, is the movie Wild. Now, I haven't seen Wild, but you watched that a few nights ago.
And this is another one I was dubious about whether I would like. I think...
You got marketed, probably.
It got marketed, yeah, not right. And I kind of got the impression it was some spoilt hippie going out
you know
on a trek to
like?
Find herself.
Yeah, it looks kind of like Eat, Pray, Love. Like here's this well-to-do lady going on a journey.
Going on a journey to find herself. So I was another
meeting
one.
Some
I only
kooky
watched
people
it and... because it, there was the Oscar buzz and we were doing this podcast. It was the only reason I watched it, really. I do like Reese, but I just didn't really think I would like the movie. And
but it's
I
not,
was wrong.
It's not Eat, Pray, Love style.
It's not Eat, Pray, Love, no. And it was adapted by a book by a woman called Cheryl Strayed, who is, she's a really interesting woman, beautiful writer. And she, it was about her life experience. So she'd been through quite a lot of things, experienced death of someone very close, and her life sort of... she couldn't live without this person. She didn't know how to live. Everything went down the toilet. She was a drug addict. Everything was going wrong, and she just knew she had to fix herself. She couldn't rely on someone to fix her. She knew it had to come from herself and went on this Pacific Crest Trail, which goes across from Mexico into
California and...
yeah, sort of all the way.
Yeah, like all the way up to Canada. Even?
Not up to Canada, no. Where it stops.
Washington.
Not Washington. No, I don't know where it stops, but it starts down near Mexico and goes a hell of a long way.
Yeah.
And it's back country, like it's through desert, mountains, snow, like all different conditions, just on her own. She not really had much hiking, really not much hiking experience, and just sort of took off with a tent and told herself that she wasn't going to be afraid and just did it. So a lot of it is her, you know, internal processing of what's happened to her, internal dialogue, I guess, thinking of things and little things she thinks. It's funny, there is humour in it as well. And I guess it was very touching because the realization, I guess, the theme in it is self-forgiveness and also how, you know, everything we do in life leads you up to the point where you are now. So talking about not regretting anything that you've done because that's got you to the point you are now. Sort of, I guess, destiny.
Yeah.
And not looking back and wishing you did things differently and forgiving yourself for what you've done. And it was just beautifully acted. She was so really, apparently her backpack then, when they first started, it was just full of newspapers. And then the director said, no, 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 this French guy. No, 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 we have to fill it with all the things. So it was like 40 kilo backpack that she was actually carrying. So it's very, she can barely stand in it to walk around in it. And when she put up a tent, Reese had never actually put up a tent. So they filmed her trying to put up a tent for the first time, trying to light a gas stove. So all these things are, yeah, her frustration with it are all real and captured on camera, and it's very inspiring. It does make you want to pick up a backpack and go and do something.
And just go for a wander.
Just go for a wander. What's and that's it? What I said, the wild is something that we all, it's for all of us, and we all can put one foot in front of the other. Something we all can experience, and also beauty that's around us as well. Taking yourself somewhere, there's beauty all around where you don't have to look far to find it, and just being immersed in it, and being with yourself and processing things that have happened. And yeah.
Do you what's your opinion of that, the of having no regrets, and because it's brought you to a place?
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. It's not one that I've had before, and I tend to think, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or I should have done that differently. So yeah, it's...
But do you have any like long-term regrets? That's what I mean. Everyone has like, oh, I shouldn't have, you know, as parents, I shouldn't have yelled at the kids, I shouldn't have said that. But I'm talking about like, and it's the same in this movie, I gather, is that it's not just minor things, these are major things.
I mean, in this movie, I mean, it's not spoiling anything because you know from the beginning, but her marriage had broken, even though she still loved him. She basically ruined it by because of her grieving, had done awful things, and the marriage had to end. And she knew she still loved him and knew that he was still the love of love, but still had to end it. So, yeah, she sort of looks back on it, and but then she ended up marrying someone else. And so things that seem horrible or that shouldn't have happened,
yeah,
or you shouldn't have done, end up getting you to where you are.
It's an interesting thought. I think I could have done without some of that stuff. I know it's the same thing. It gets you to where you are, but there's a few things in my past which would have been nicer had they not have happened. And I don't know if I needed them. If that
makes
sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but you can't go back and change it either. There has to be some kind of acceptance of it or forgiveness. So it deals with a lot of issues, and there's a lot of talk about it being a woman's movie, which it could have easily been a male, and that it's just everyone's story.
Yeah.
I think lots of people could relate to it, and to me it's not gender specific. It's great that there's a female character and a great role for a female, which is Reese Witherspoon's production company. What they were after and what they're about is creating roles for women, interesting roles for women, because she was getting frustrated with the kind of roles that were being offered to her.
Yeah, like Sweet Home Alabama 2.
Yeah, and she said it was just nothing. So the only way to do it was to create it herself. So she has this, so the two first films she produced were this and Gone Girl.
Yeah.
So both amazing.
She did Gone Girl, produced
Gone Girl. So two amazing roles for women actresses to express these kind of roles and things that I think.
What's the actress from Gone Girl?
Rosamund Pike.
So
she again was typecast and was only being offered a certain type of role. So
and she's nominated as well.
She's nominated as well. So a lot of the films link up in this.
Yeah.
In this year.
Well, who's going to win? No one. They're all winners.
So I have a really soft spot for Reese and this movie.
Now, is Laura Dern?
And Laura Dern,
she's nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
She's just amazing. I think Laura Dern is just such a brilliant person and actress, and has so much depth. And I just love her. I have such a crush on her.
Really?
I do. Just the way she talks, and she's live, and she's wise, and everything she says just sounds so wise. She's just such an interesting woman, and can only be. She can only only has to be on the screen for a minute or two and you just get this sense of the character. She just brings it across in her smile and her expressions.
It's a weird term to think about as an actress, but like integrity.
She brings integrity to it. And this is the role she plays is very important. And obviously she's playing a real person, real life, that was very dear to the writer, Cheryl Strayed. So having that pressure, and I think she just did it. So
she's good. Also in the movie version of The Fault in Our Stars, which I watched last year and enjoyed more than I expected to. Mm. But she again is very good in that role. Mm. She had some very heartbreaking scenes in it, but again, very real.
Yeah.
And it's often brutal.
Mm. Mm. So that was great. So I'm thoroughly immersed in the book now and just enjoying every page of it.
Okay, so that was Still Alice and that was Wild.
And Wild.
We're going to move to a very different film, which we might just get on to Foxcatcher, mainly just to talk about, I think, Steve Carell's nominated for Best Actor and...
Oh, Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo, thank you. Had a mental blank. Mark Ruffalo is nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Mm. Now, first things first, Mark Ruffalo nominated over Channing Tatum. Was that a surprise?
No, I can see that. It's not a surprise to me. I think Channing Tatum's his role was rather limited in that, I think. Maybe just because the character he was playing was quite wooden. And,
yeah, that's true. He portrayed him well.
He did portray well, but Mark's character, he had more of the warmth and more of the character of the two. So it's like more room to...
True.
Yeah.
In my vast acting experience that I have had, it is way, way more difficult to play a boring character.
Mm.
Like that's what I noticed in Foxcatcher, which is about, and again, let's watch a movie about wrestling.
Wrestling.
Not WWE wrestling, but Olympic
Greco-Roman
wrestling.
Yes.
That when it's on the Olympics, no one ever watches, well, not many people watch, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And again, but his character, Channing Tatum's character, is not very bright and not emotive. Mm. And that's hard to play in an interesting way.
Yeah, and I think he did do it well.
Yeah. I mean, even Mark Ruffalo's character they're not big characters. But then you have Steve Carell's character, who, again, he's nominated for Best Actor. It's very odd.
Mm.
I can't really explain it any other way.
Mm.
But did you find him off-putting, like, acting-wise, or what did you think of his performance? Margaret.
Yeah, he's a very odd character.
Yeah.
Very odd character. His delivery of lines, the way he speaks, it's all odd and you don't know where he's coming from.
Yeah,
you know?
So to anyone who, if you haven't seen it, it's about, again, this wrestling.
So Mark Ruffalo and Channing Tatum are these, it's a true story.
So they won Olympic gold.
Brother wrestlers.
Yeah, they won Olympic gold in 1984 and then this very wealthy man, one of the richest men in America,
Jean Dupont,
wants to start his own wrestling.
He has a dream, he has a goal of having his own wrestling team that he has a passion for wrestling and he wants to create this team, they come and live on his property. He's the coach. He's got illusions of grandeur, I guess, about his ability to coach. He's actually terrible, but he's got the money, so he can pay them whatever they want, basically.
Yeah.
So they agreed to come, and he prances around like he's the coach, and basically he doesn't...
It's a weird
kind of humour him, so he thinks he's good at what he does and pays them a lot of money. Very odd situation.
Very odd. There's a fantastic scene where a film crew's making a documentary about him, which is actually the real one, is actually on YouTube.
Did get someone to come and film him being the greatest coach of the greatest team.
To talk about, yeah, his dreams and how he is shaping these wrestlers into Olympic champions. And it's on YouTube, and it's 100% real, the one on YouTube, and it's so odd. It's probably one of those stories, again, that has probably been... is such a strange movie, and that's the thing about
it, is a strange
an movie. Oscar movie. It's
again, I guess, like Whiplash, but this is actually real wrestling. To set it around wrestling, it's such a unusual
to set it around choice. Wrestling, but and it is, and to say, oh, who are we going to get?
We'll
get Steve Carell.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone doubts that he's a great actor.
He was fantastic. Very warm. In this.
But in this, he's so.
He's just fantastic. You don't think, you'd stop thinking it's Steve Carell.
Yeah.
He just is this oddball millionaire wrestling wannabe character. And the brothers, the dynamic between them shifts and change. And and then something very, very bizarre happens, and John. Well, it's a true story.
Yeah, but we won't go into it.
We won't go into the details of it, but...
Yeah, something very, very strange.
Very strange happens. It's quite well known about what happened. But you sort of, you still don't see it coming because I didn't know the details of it.
No.
So it did take me by surprise to come out of the blue.
And the reason why it happens isn't
clear, and it's also not clear exactly what happened between the two, because... Channing Tatum's character and John, they were like a father-son sort of thing.
Again, it's like you said, it is very similar in themes to Whiplash.
It hints at there was some sort of sexual something going on. It's not explicit about it, but you kind of think something happened.
Yeah.
It doesn't go into specifics or details. But there is a undercurrent of this sexuality, I guess, which could be uncomfortable for people to watch, especially when the brothers, I think, are wrestling. It's very, very physical.
The whole movie's got an undercurrent of, is this really what's happening?
Is it sexual or is it wrestling? Are they getting turned on or are they just the sport? I don't know.
Oh, really? You thought there was a sexual undercurrent to the wrestling?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it's two men really... pumping and grinding against each other.
True, yeah, that's true.
It does have that sort of, innuendo and...
Well, it's, the old Greek and Greco-Roman wrestling, I believe, used to be done naked. So.
Yeah, it's very physical and, it's a very intriguing movie. The characters are interesting. And the portrayal of this crazy millionaire by Steve Carell is one to watch.
Did it make you want to go and find old videos of wrestling on YouTube and have a look at what actually happens?
No, you? I've seen enough of our wrestling.
No, not really, Yeah, it's just...
But also, I think the similarity with Whiplash is that the pushing to... succeed. Yeah. Obviously, Channing Tatum had to be number one, was being paid a lot of money by this millionaire to win. He made it very clear he needed a winning team. That's why he was paying him. And an amazing scene where he's put on a lot of too much weight, so he's purging, and which is common with wrestlers. I think a couple died recently from anorexia. It's very it's common in the wrestling because they have to stick to this very strict
weight limit, sweat it out, get in the sweat box,
which
all
is
that kind of stuff.
To watch them, pushing the body to these extreme limits to get that. I mean, who wrestling? I don't know.
Another podcast I listen to, which is Jay Moore's More Stories, and he was a wrestler at high school, and it's many times people are like, oh yeah, but you always strike me as a bit of a jock. Because you were used to do wrestling, and he was like, wrestlers were the freaks of the school. He said they were always the weird kids. They were never normal people doing wrestling. No one normal wants to do wrestling, trying to get sweat, running upstairs and sweating it out. And
wearing big hooded fleecy jumpers and getting on a bike.
Doing all kinds of stuff just to lose the weight. So it's an interesting
insight into the world. Yeah. I don't want to revisit it, but
No,
it was interesting
it's not
reading.
one I don't know which you could watch again, but it's certainly to watch for the performances and the
Yeah.
story. Okay, well, let's move on to Birdman. Okay, now
Ah, Birdman.
the darling of the film critics,
The darling of the
and at the
critics.
moment it has a big Oscar buzz, and again, Michael Keaton is the star of the movie, and he's nominated for Best Actor, and Edward Norton's nominated for Best Actress, and Emma Stone is nominated for Best Supporting Actress for playing his daughter, and Naomi Watts is in it. It's an excellent cast, and Zach Galifianakis is in it as well, and he's pretty good and very subdued in this movie.
Yes.
The last movie that David and Margaret reviewed on their show, no, at the movies, the last one ever, was Birdman, and both of them gave it 5 stars and said it was an excellent film and about success and movie making and theatre. It's filmed in a really interesting way where it's meant to appear like it's one continuous shot. I mean, it's pretty obvious it's not one continuous shot, but
Yeah, it gives you, it's trying to give the illusion of a one continuous shot, which to me, it gets to the point where it's actually distracting because yeah, they're going down corridors and turning and
I'm just
you
going to
know.
point out to the people
I did not like this
listening,
movie.
Justine is with the way she said that was with a very tired look on her face. Now, you don't like this movie.
I do not like this movie. I'm sorry. I put my hand up. Now, the director is Alejandro González Iñárritu. Now, he wrote and directed Babel and 21 Grams,
Yes.
both of which I really liked.
You did.
I did. I love Babel. 21 Grams I also really enjoy.
Yeah,
So I
Babel
was
was
interested. I
Babel.
was so excited to see this movie.
21 Grams was a bit, I thought, a bit overwrought and
Can see
a
how.
bit overdone.
I did like it. I like the themes. I like the acting. I followed it. I really, was following the characters and had interest in them.
Yeah.
I cared about what happened to them. I like this movie
Yeah.
where, okay, I think my problem with this movie I've discovered
Yeah.
is it's mean-spirited. By its own
Okay.
admission, I think it is mean-spirited.
That's really interesting. I don't know
Now,
if I've ever heard anyone
look, it's
say that.
you know me, I'm not into big blockbuster Transformers movies.
No,
I'm not
never.
into those movies.
We actually saw Transformers, which was a surprise.
Ugh, hate it. So, I think this movie, it's about, this is what I got from it, is the merits of theatre and how, or even art cinema, and how they are suffering, and they a lot of great work doesn't get to be seen, whereas something like for the masses, it's far inferior, like Transformers or some big budget blockbuster gets all this money and attention and gets to come to light when these are beautiful artists and work. Now that's a theme I agree with. I would love to see more artistic work. I don't go to the big blockbusters. I don't like them. I don't see them. But to watch a movie that just explicitly sort of makes fun, I think, of those audiences, like I think, it will make you think it's going to be this kind of movie, but really it's about this. So you'll sit in the movie and, we've tricked you, ha ha ha
Sorry, what do you mean? Like that
Like
you think it's going to be
thinking
an action movie and
that
it's not?
yeah, like I think that there's this element of thinking, Birdman, like some people will sit there thinking that it's going to be a sort of superhero movie, and it's totally not. So, fool for them. I didn't think it would be that, but I still thought that was a mean-spirited kind of
He's
attitude in the
the
movie.
main sorry, the main character, which is Michael Keaton's character. I guess he's kind of treated mean-spirited too, because so he's playing an actor who used to be an action star, Birdman, not even half a step away from Michael Keaton as Batman,
Yeah. There's lots of in
who
jokes.
then tries to become a bit more legitimate by putting on a Raymond Carver play, because
That
on
is
again,
fraught with problems from day one.
Yeah, and it's not really a good play, and he's not very good in the lead. And
then he has this voice of the Birdman character in his ear.
Yeah, which is the voice of his ego.
So there's this whole sort of this crossing the lines of reality and make believe.
What's in his head and what's real.
What's real. So I found it hard to grab onto. I found it hard to go along with it because, yeah, I did get this sense of trickery through it, and we want you to think this, but it's actually I can see why people like it. I can see its brilliance, but I did not like it. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like how these amazing – there's a very memorable scene with Emma Stone. She gives a knockout sort of scene and then – somehow disappears. So yeah. I don't know what happened to her character.
Edward Norton's the same.
He comes on, I'm thinking, yeah, this is going somewhere. He disappears. And again, I believe it's on purpose to trick the viewer into thinking it's going to go somewhere when it goes somewhere completely different.
Yeah.
So that to me just, I couldn't hold on to it. I couldn't get into it. I lost interest in the characters. I see its themes. I see its messages. I see where it's going, but didn't enjoy it at all. Sorry.
Oh dear.
So I think it's a bit of there's a lot of inside jokes, and I think if you're in the theatre, there's a lot, I guess, that you'd see that you could nod along with.
The industry.
The industry
does vote for the Oscars, exactly. So there's every chance it's going to win, if not an Oscar for Michael Keaton,
and
the best
just
actor.
Like a
but
a big in-joke that I'm not privy to, I feel like. It's just...
Yeah.
Made. It's a movie that seems to have been made for the critics and for the industry,
yeah.
Not for viewers. But lots of people seem to enjoy it, so great for them. But
so you've got Michael Keaton, who's portraying an actor who hasn't been seen much after being an action superhero,
yeah.
Like he was in Batman. And you've got Edward Norton portraying an actor who's difficult and passionate, but a fantastic performer
actor
on stage,
yeah.
Just like, you know, Edward Norton's supposed mm-hmm. to be. So there, like you said, there are all these
in-jokes
all the way through. Zach Galifianakis is playing, again, a character who is entertaining, maybe not hilariously entertaining, but his job is comic relief as well.
That's right, yeah.
But I found, very similar to you, I really enjoyed the first half of it, and I'm sure I texted people.
Yeah,
I said,
this
movie's great.
Really
this,
cool.
I'm really enjoying this.
And then
the second half, they said, Edward Norton's character disappeared. Okay, Emma Stone's character disappears.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And then it just becomes about Michael Keaton's mm-hmm. character, and I didn't find that as interesting.
In the weird kind of reality that he
yeah,
exists
is this real?
In.
Is this not
is
real?
This real? So
does
you
it
lose
matter?
All sense of being able to hold on to a storyline.
Yeah. And again,
at
it's uncomfortable to find people's entertainment in one man's descent into madness.
Mm.
Like that's what you're seeing, this man's stress and agitation, and gets more and more stressful and agitated. I don't know if I want to watch that. You know, I've seen many movies where you do see that, a slow descent into that, and it's usually uncomfortable viewing. Now, does that make that not worthwhile, or does that make it...
I'm all for uncomfortable viewing. I love uncomfortable viewing that challenges you and, you know, pushes you and makes you uncomfortable. But bloody hell, you need a storyline.
Yeah.
You need something to follow.
You did say this movie felt like it was a giant middle finger to the audience.
And that's what I meant. Yeah, it's like, come in here, you think you're going to get this, then we're going to give you this. Ha 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 ha. Sorry.
Oh.
You know, and yeah, good someone I know, friend, said, no, it's a middle finger up at the industry. Yeah, I see that too. You know, I see that. But the industry and also the people that go and watch the movies and also people sitting and watching the movie itself, I think.
Yeah, it's meta, Justin. You just missed the point.
I could have. Maybe I missed it altogether entirely. But
it's the risk, I guess. If you make a movie which is intending to mock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
moviegoers.
Moviegoers or action stars or actors who think they're bigger than a performance, then I guess you have to be aware that people are going to be like, well, that's not cool.
Yeah, even though
I'm watching the thing that you're mocking. Sentiment. So if you're mocking it, then
just make a good movie. Just make an interesting movie. Don't make one about how hard it is to make one.
Oh, that's great. I think we might finish on that note for that movie because that's an excellent description. And we're going to finish with a movie. I mean, the Oscars are usually awarded to a lot of the times, and you spoke of Gwyneth Paltrow before, and I've read many a book about what is it, film companies, and in particular Miramax, did in the 90s with just spending lots and lots of money promoting one film to win lots of awards at the expense of other films. My point is, I think Boyhood should win awards for its achievement.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain?
Yeah, so Boyhood, directed by Richard Linklater, one of my favorite people. he wrote and directed Bernie, one of my favorite movies.
It's true.
A Scanner Darkly, Waking Life, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset. All of them amazing. And
he's a director who would never imagine would be here for Best Picture, although he did get nominated for Best Screenplay last year for Before Midnight with Ethan Hawke and Judy Dilfey.
Yeah, Before Midnight.
Dilfey. So he has, I think people are, catching on, or he's been like this cult director who's everyone's kind of like, yeah, he's pretty great now.
Yeah,
everyone's realised how
he's pretty just great amazing.
So, what's the premise?
So, I've seen a lot of his stuff and love all of it. And this movie is interesting in its, its whole idea is filming over a long period of time, mainly centred around this boy in a family. But also the other family members and the family dynamics and how it changes over a long period of time. So you check in with this family each year.
Yeah, it's over 12 years.
So it's over 12 years.
Filmed it over 12 years.
It's shot over 45 days from 2002 to 2013. So the actors would get together, they would shoot, and then...
Rehearse and shoot.
That'd be it. That'd be it. Get together the next year.
And he would spend all that year writing...
So I didn't know any of this. I went in blind seeing it.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was shot out. I didn't know anything about it. And I just heard that it was good. And Richard Lynch, that's all I need to know. And I said to Matt, this is a period piece. It looks like early 2000s.
Yeah, the music drops the you music, into
it drops you. You sort of know you pick up this early 2000s.
George Bush references.
And he said, oh, don't you know about it? It goes over time. I think you sort of told me, or you said watch, see, and and you get to see this family
and this boy
grow. This boy, so it's mainly about the boy. He's only six.
He was five or six.
So you see him in the course of the movie. You check in each year. You see him change and develop. Yeah. Go through all that. It ends when he's off to college, first year at college. So you meet his mum, and where they're at there, the whole situation changes. His sister, she grows.
Yeah.
His parents are separated. Ethan Hawke is the dad. So you get to see the dad spending time with the kids and what that relationship's like. Then you see the mum and how her life changes over such a long period of time, but condensed down into a regular movie's length. And see them change physically, even though it's a fictional story, you feel like you're in this family, and it's amazing. So you end up with the 17-year-old boy, and I've straight away had to rewind to the beginning to remind myself what he looked like at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
It also delves into the classic Linklater themes of life, meaning of life, why we're here, death, birth, families, divorce.
But if you look at a lot of his movies too, they're all about relationship. Really looking at relationships.
He examines...
Yeah, it's a good word.
He examines relationships people, a lot about death,
yeah.
I think, and making how to live your life, how different people's perspectives. He's just such a fascinating director,
yeah.
He's a writer, and he expresses these thoughts where I just get that.
Yeah,
I can see that. And yeah, just the humanity. The humanity.
Oh, the humanity.
The human condition. The human condition, and how it relates to other people. The yeah. meaning of it all. All those lovely themes that he explores in movies like Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Waking Life, one of my faves.
Yeah.
Are here played out in his family.
He also did one of your least favourite movies of all time, which is School of Rock.
Oh, and we forget about that one. I just erased that one out.
Yeah, so he said that when he watched it, he's watched it a few times in cinemas and or with people, and, you know, the same thing with it. The people who don't know what it's about, he said the same thing, like, oh, it's a period piece. It's set in 2002. How did you get the, oh, you got a cool, like, old computer, you got this. And then eventually they say, got a kid that looked like that kid. And then about halfway through it, when it's gone enough years, he's like, huh. And he said, then they get it. And that must be pretty fun for people to finally get that. The thing is that, and maybe an argument that's made, that, oh, yes, it's the darling of actors and the industry because it's a gimmick.
Mm.
Okay, so it's a gimmicky film. He filmed, you know, a movie over 12 years. Where very little happens, okay?
Said, it's life.
There's no action in it. And as he said, like, he's watched it, and some of the scenes, this is what really interested me in it, was that some of the scenes you are waiting for something bad is going to happen because you are conditioned as an audience member to go, here are a group of teenagers messing around with sharp objects, something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
Or here's a couple, or here's people driving along.
The classic movie.
Yeah, you know. And we've been conditioned as an audience member to know if someone says to you, you need to keep your eyes on the road more when you're driving, that something terrible's going to happen to that. Or
he's
going to
learn his lesson now.
As soon as someone coughs in a movie, you know that they're going to die of lung cancer in the third act of the film, just because that's what you're conditioned to do. When this movie doesn't do that, it just says, this is what's happening with this kid's life. And it really is just like dropping in on this family.
After watching a Linklater movie, I always feel a little insignificant in the universe. It's a sad way to feel, but you feel like I'm not special. You know, everyone's going through this. Everyone just is on their path. I think the really touching thing, or the thing that really stood out to me in this movie, the most touching scene of the whole film, was when the mother went after he's gone to college.
And who's the mama?
Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
She's another brilliant actress.
I think she's nominated. She might be nominated for Best Actress, so that would make Reese and Julianne Moore. Yes. It's going to be tough.
But she said, I thought there'd be more.
Yeah.
As the mother. I thought there would be more. You know, you have, and that resonated to me as a mother, you think. Your kids are always going to be there. There's always something, you know, they're always with you and all these life experiences for them. And then they grow up and you just think it's going to keep going.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Yeah, that just made me feel,
It
doesn't keep going.
Well, I think as a parent too, raising children can't compare in intensity to the first, I don't know, maybe in the first 6 months or the first year of your first child after they're born, that intensity of emotion and feeling.
We haven't got to teenage years yet.
No, that's true, but I'll be very surprised if that intensity is there even in teenage years from that. If you think about even that first 6 weeks when you have your first child, you can't experience that intensity, I don't think, for that, for a six-week period ever again, because it is just like, holy crap, we have a new child, this is our child, we're parents, all this world gets opened up to you, all of a sudden you don't think about your life anymore, you think about their life and how long they're going to live, and so then you're thinking, Does that make sense? You even start thinking beyond your own life. It's probably the first time you do that.
Yeah.
Because you go, oh, yeah. Before that you just go, all right, I'm going to live till however long and then that's
existence.
It. But
yeah.
Now you're like, oh my God, when I die, then my kids are going to keep living and so on. And that kind of stuff just happens once.
Yeah.
You don't get to have that feeling again.
No.
They're different feelings, but I'm maybe that's what got me in that movie was that she said, I thought there'd be more, was that maybe you think, oh, there's going to be... But you know as well as I do, we have a six-year-old and a three-year-old, and you're already into a routine of life that intensity, if you had that now for 6 weeks, it would totally burn you out.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with that line, it's so beautiful, because to me I took it as being, you know, very specifically as a mother, but it could also be life in general, you know, you sort of think there's going to be this and there's that, and then we move, you know, you do this, and suddenly you get to the point where you think, well, what is next?
Yeah.
It does eventually come to an end, you know, and it goes by quickly. You get to see that in this movie, how quickly it goes, literally before your eyes, this family and how they change. And knowing, you know, that's just...
And then at some point you have to let your children go.
Yeah, which is and that's what she struggled with. It's the hard thing. You always think when they're little, or at least when they're under your roof, there's some sort of control or, you know, protection of them.
Yeah.
But when they leave, yeah, they're on their own to some extent. It's letting go.
Yeah.
Which that process starts from the minute you give birth is the process of letting go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it eventually...
They tend to give you 18 years to prepare. It's not enough time.
Becoming their own people.
Yeah.
And then, and developing their own place in the world. Yeah.
That's a very good way to end it. I think it's a movie about... your place in the world, and how you find that.
Yeah, which is a common theme in his movies. Should we talk about Bernie while we're at it?
No, it's not up for an Oscar award, but go and watch Bernie. We can do that at a later date. Later on in the series of Justine and Matt talk about movies all the time, we're going to talk about our favourite foreign films. So be on the listen for that one in the future.
Yes, very excited about that one.
Thank you, Justine. We will be, I'm sure, either watching highlights of the Oscars or watching bits of the Oscars when it airs.
Oh, we'll be sitting here with our popcorn.
Yes, and saying, see, I told you so. Or,
watching Birdman.
Yes.
Win
every category. Let's watch Birdman again. It's won Best Picture. We might as well watch it again.
And I'll be eating my words about how it is. Maybe it is great. It's genius.
Yes, that's right. No, you'll be the outlier that hates it. No longer like
it is a 1 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10 movie.
It seems to be.
It is a love it or hate it.
Yes, indeed.
But go and see it.
Good. Yes, exactly. Experience it. Okay, well, thank you very much, Justine.
Well, thank you, Matthew.